Behind this door, a dark entity. Evil, ancient, and hungry.
Oh well.
Let me go in and say hi.
They can be a great people, Kullo. They wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, above all, this reason, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
Welcome to Behind the Panels, issue 79, the comic book podcast that knows it's ugly. I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
In this issue, Warner tries to pick a name for the next Superman film. Maybe they should ask Marvel for help. Then Seth Rogen is involved in a TV version of Preacher. Is the role of Arseface not available then? Plus, our kick-ass pick of the week, Hellboy, The Midnight Circus by Mike Mignola, Duncan Fegredo, and Dave Stewart. This is Behind the Panels.
Coming from the farthest reaches of the universe to challenge the worst villains on Earth are the most powerful heroes ever in the Battle of the Superpowers Collection. Superpowers figures with power action, each sold separately.
This is a powerful bill. Season, and they've got power action like Superman.
And the Flash.
Watch out for the Joker. Flash uses power suits isn't power action.
And it comes with the mini comic.
The Superpowers Collection, Superman, the Flash, Lex Luthor, Joker, and other figures with power action, each sold separately, new from Kenner.
Not that new. We should address the fact that we are a man down again.
Yeah, where is Longo?
He's off with the stars today. He's off down doing the red carpet premiere for Anchorman 2 here in Sydney.
He's a huge Adam McKay fan.
Yeah,
so,
it's very big. So we, like he said, oh, I'll try and make it over. We said, Dave, you got to go do that.
You got to go see your heroes when you get a chance to see your heroes.
So he's off to do that, and he's on a junket tomorrow, I think. So best of luck to him.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely. Hopefully, maybe we might even be able to score some product off of him.
Oh, yeah, we might even be able to get some audio for next week's
cool,
GMC.
Wouldn't it? Yeah,
be very, very,
very
cool.
Nice. Maybe Damn Good Cup could share. You know?
Yeah. We could get the old league of extraordinary podcasters and bloggers happening.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, David, how have you been last week?
I've been good. We've been, as you can see, continually rearranging the studio.
The studio's looking very nice.
We've got a little green room happening.
We've got a green room. So if you're a guest and you want to come on the show, we're going to have a place to sit you down
before
you come in.
And you don't have to climb over furniture to get in.
No, so. it's wonderful.
We should also mention that the studio's nice and cool because we've got air conditioning.
Oh, we're sitting pretty. I've got to say today, look, we've both been watching this morning. We'll be recording a Geek Movie Club special immediately after this. We've both watched The Day of the Doctor, 50th anniversary Doctor special. Oh my God. The squeeze! big shout out to Snake Oz, Matt White, who I was sitting next to us at the cinema this morning.
We haven't seen Snake Oz in ages. He used to come in and bring toys into the studio. It was very cool.
Oh, right. Yeah.
He brought his quadcopter in at one point.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That was before my time or when I was off or something.
Yeah. I don't remember. We flew it around the studio, at the old studio. That was kind of cool.
Back in Randwick. Yeah.
And digital Rubik's Cubes. And he always has great. Where does he get these wonderful toys?
Oh, you mean.
Where does he get those wonderful toys?
That's the one.
Oh, so look, we've had a big week, but before we go any further into this, I think it's time that in the tradition of the Day of the Doctor, we fire up the Wayback Machine for a vintage clip of the week.
All right.
What do you reckon?
Let's do it.
As the Hulk is searching for Rick, the strange circus is on its way to another town.
Come in! Come in! Ha ha! The ringmaster is waiting! Ha 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 ha!
Meanwhile, Rick, awakened from his hypnotic state, lies helpless, bound and gagged.
Well, I gotta be going, Rick. Time for my performance. Stay where you are till I get back.
Going. It looks like I'm really in trouble if the Hulk doesn't come to help me. Hulk! Hulk! Hear me, Hulk! Follow my thought waves!
That's him! Rick, I'm coming! At last, the Hulk! Don't worry, I'll take care of him. Just aim me toward him.
quickly. The power hose. Nothing that lives can withstand its pressure.
He's stunned. Now's our chance.
Find him and put him in that wagon.
The men find the mighty Hulk, thinking they have overpowered him. But he is simply motionless, waiting for the next command from Rick Jones.
Don't worry.
I love the fact I didn't realize that Rick Jones could summon the Hulk with his mind
Rick
powers.
Jones can do anything.
That's true.
He is everywhere. In the latest comic books, Rick Jones is actually working for The Watcher.
Ah, well, there you go.
So go figure, you know?
Well, you know, but even he couldn't stand up to the power hose.
No. I'm coming.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, well, that was, of course, from the 1966 Incredible Hulk one, which I chose specifically because it was a circus theme, which is, of course, fits this week's thing. David Longo's not here, so I'm just whacking his microphone.
You can actually just move it out of the way.
Right, yeah.
You have more arm movements. Like, can't you talk without moving
I can't talk without moving my hands. Yes, yeah, see the Doctor Who 50th anniversary special. Yeah, very special this week because we're doing the Midnight Circus, which is a Hellboy book.
When was the last Hellboy book before this?
I have no idea. I don't keep up with Hellboy. They've got BPRD running as a regular book, and Hellboy in Hell, I think, was the last series that they did, which was a mini series.
I haven't read it nearly enough Hellboy.
Let's not forget Itty Bitty Hellboy.
Oh, God. Isn't this Itty Bitty Hellboy in many ways?
Well, actually, one of the artists who does Itty Bitty Hellboy did one of the Harley Quinn stories, I think,
in this week's
issue, which is a really great time for us to kick up our what we've been reading section, I think.
Well, looks like we got ourselves a reader. Read between the lines, bitch.
And I feel I have to start.
Yeah.
Because you know how I feel about Amanda Connor.
Yeah, you're not a big fan, are you?
No, I'm not a huge fan. No. Realistically, the Harley Quinn book finally came out.
Yes.
The zero issue of Harley Quinn, which...
Finally a DC zero issue we wanted to read.
Absolutely. And I didn't know what to expect with this. And as you know, I really want her to be the ongoing artist, but it doesn't look like she's going to be. But what they did for the zero issue was actually quite fun. Now, I think we have slightly differing opinions.
Well, look, I think what they've done with this is they've tried to make Harley Quinn the Deadpool of the DC
universe. Of the DC universe, absolutely. And it was actually quite amusing because the entire issue is about she's going to have a new comic book and who's going to draw it.
Yeah.
And it's written by Palmiotti and Connor.
And it's very fourth wall breaking. Every section is her introducing a new artist, saying, oh, I like the way they've done this. I like the way she's drawn me. I like the way he's drawn me.
And then
me.
Some of them she goes, I don't like this at all.
Oh, yeah. You know?
It's like,
oh, he's really good, but could he maintain a monthly schedule?
Yeah, absolutely. And that seemed to be a running joke, because the whole thing about maintaining a monthly schedule.
Yeah.
Which makes me wonder, is this why Amanda Connor is not going to draw it? Because
possibly.
She draws the first three or four pages, and she draws the last two. And her stuff is fantastic. Her Harley Quinn is really good, but she's not going to continue.
Oh, and you've got
this.
One page of Adam Hughes, who does that beautiful page. And again, he's not going to be able to maintain a monthly schedule there.
There's a couple artists in there who I could actually really see carrying it on.
Yeah.
There's a couple I really don't want to see carrying it on. But, you know, that's, you know, matter of opinion and taste on the artwork. But I just really want to see Connor do another ongoing, but she's not going to
Connor will be writing with Jimmy Palmiotti. Yeah. And there's actually, speaking of husband, there is actually, because I think they got married not too long ago, and there's a little panel in there showing the two of them getting married.
Yeah, and it's all being disrupted by Harley Quinn.
Yeah,
it's a very cute. It's a very cute book.
Look, I actually really enjoyed it. I didn't expect to enjoy it as much as I did. Mm. And I will definitely be checking out the ongoing series.
But what worries me, being a DC title, is it's going to be this really cute introduction book where they basically say, yes, from now on, we're not going to be breaking the fourth wall. We're actually going to tell a proper story, and it's going to die.
I think they said, don't worry, we'll always break the fourth wall.
No, I think the very last panel, if you read really carefully, says, we won't break it as much.
Oh, okay.
So it's like, I think there will be a little bit of it, but I think they're saying the fun and frivolity of this issue is now finished, and now we get to actually do
because that's
a story.
That's the one thing the DCU is missing at the moment, is pure fun.
Deadpool.
It's just fun, generally. Yeah. All the stories are so serious. There's nothing fun in there. Outside, you have to go to like the DC universe with all those things like the Batman 66 or you know the Scooby-Doo team-ups where they've got Batman teaming up with Scooby-Doo and all those kind of things.
Or Batman 66, which is probably their closest thing they've got to fun at the moment.
Yeah, Batman 66.
Oh, that and Adventures of Superman. the webcomic.
And they're all the webcomic stuff.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
absolutely. None of their print stuff is fun.
At all. No, DC New 52 is the most serious thing in the world. I mean, Marvel's not doing much better, but they've got a few books that are fun. You know, going throughout there, or books with a bit of humour in it as well. So I think that's really good. But the other book that came out this week, we really, really have to give a big shout out to, of course, is A Voice in the Dark, number one.
Absolutely.
Which, you know, it's hard. We actually read this so long ago that it's now finally out on shelves. This is, of course, by our good friend Laramie Taylor, who we had on the show not too long ago to interview him about this first issue. You can find out more about him, of course, at laramietaylor.com. Look, this was an issue we really enjoyed. We both really enjoyed a lot, so much so we actually want to see what happens next, because he introduces us to this town of Cutter's Circle, and it's a little bit Twin Peaks, a little bit Dexter, a little bit Buffy, and there's all that kind of stuff mixing in there. I'm using them as points of reference. I'm not saying he's copying
It's not copying any of that stuff.
No, but I mean, that's the kind of vibe we're going for. Yeah,
it has a real Dexter vibe to it.
Yeah, and rereading it again when I was writing a review this week, I really, really appreciated the fact that he had such a strong collection of female characters in there as well. And that we sort of left on this cliffhanger, which we've got the second issue about, but we won't talk about that yet because it doesn't come out until next month. So,
if you want to hear Jeremy talk about this,
Jeremy,
I'm so tired.
You're still
furniture.
Stuck in that thing we were talking about before the show.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So, if you want to hear Laramie talk about his book, though, and talk about the process that went into it and what drives him and so forth, the interview is fantastic. And go back, have a look on our feed. You'll actually see it there. It's the last one shot that's on the list.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, it's a great episode, and the offer still stands, Laramie, but when Kick-Ass 3 finishes, we're going to get you back on the show to talk about that as well.
Absolutely.
And certainly as your book progresses, or anything else you want to talk about.
Absolutely. And we should also mention that Kick-Ass 3, the latest issue, is also out
this
as well.
Week, yeah.
And that's actually not bad.
I've not been keeping. I'm actually saving that now until it's finished.
I was going to say, the funny thing is, with the exception of Kick-Ass 2, Hit Girl, and now Kick-Ass 3, everything else I've read of Mark Millar's, I've read as blocks.
Yeah.
And in reading the Kick-Ass books...
He works best that way.
He works best that way. And I was saying, reading the Kick-Ass 2, Hit Girl, and now Kick-Ass 3, I really wish I'd read them as blocks.
Yeah.
Because they're too long between drinks, and when you read them as a block, you get a much more... You might get a much better flow.
You know what? I think I've just decided, when I finally read Kick-Ass 3 in its entirety, because I started reading it, when I finally read it, I'm going to go back and read Kick-Ass 1...
2.
Hit Girl, Hit 2, and 3.
I think I will do the same, and that's when we get Laramie on.
Damn straight.
Okay?
Okay, that sounds good.
The actual quote, by the way, just so we get everything straight, in Harley Quinn?
Yes.
Is at the end, it says, continued in Harley Quinn number 1, where we swear we will stop breaking the fourth
wall. Okay. I think I must have misread it as we swear we'll never stop breaking the fourth
wall. Yeah, so they're going to stop. So in other words, they're going to take all the fun out of the book.
Well, I guess that's what DC's up to now.
That's right.
Also, look, I guess, we've been playing a bit of Margo.
Hey. Jeremy, meet Margo.
You're going to get along just fine.
All right.
Marvel Lego Superheroes. We're going to save our discussion of that for two reasons. Well, we're going to wait till Mr. Longo's back next week.
And when Nicholas is here.
Nicholas is here as well.
Nicholas is powering through it. Can I just tell you?
Yeah, look, I actually forgot myself because there's a few bugs in there, I think it's annoying me, and a lot of people reported this one. Level 5, which is the one where it's Hawkeye and
Black Widow.
Team up together, and they have to break into this Hydra building, and it's hidden in a shop. If you go to it straight away, it's marked on the map, but if you save your game, go away and come back, it's really hard to find it on the map again, and a lot of people have reported that. So little things like that annoy me, but it's such a fun game, I don't care.
I'm going to give a hint out to those who are playing the game as well, and it may be really obvious to them, but my son was running around it for like half an hour. The hub for LEGO Marvel Superheroes is actually inside the helicarrier. So you've got to fly up to the helicarrier, and then you go inside. He couldn't find his way in.
Yeah.
It turns out there's an elevator on the flight deck.
Right.
So there's a big circle shield logo. You stand on that, flip the switch, and it goes down.
I'm actually finding this stuff like that is not obvious.
It's not obvious. He's very, very experienced at playing these Lego games, and he was getting so frustrated.
It is. It's frustrating.
Because he couldn't find the hub.
Yeah, but otherwise it's such a fun game. But we'll talk about it more next week. What we should really talk about, speaking of S.H.I.E.L.D., some TV shows.
Oh, yes.
Three shows again this week.
Once again, with television, we try not to spoil, so we're not going to try and spoil it, but there are going to be a few little hints throwing out there.
Particularly Arrow, because it hasn't screened on Australian television yet. But there's a new episode of Arrow, a new episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., new episode of The Walking Dead. I will just say, with the episode of The Walking Dead, no spoilers, because I know you probably haven't watched
it
yet.
I haven't watched it yet.
Walking Dead.
I'm saving Walking Dead up. Like you and Mark Millar, I'm saving Walking Dead up.
I actually think that's wise with the season, because it does have a very arc-like feel to it.
Ever since the Sophia thing, I don't watch Walking Dead weekly.
All I'm going to say is this episode focused on a character we've not focused on in a while, and it was a complete solo backstory episode, and it was actually really, really good.
Wow, okay.
So, and it wasn't current continuity or anything. It was just showing you, filling in some gaps for us. So I really, really like it. Well, I want to talk about that more in depth. In fact, we'll probably do a Walking Dead season 4
special.
That's
what we said last season.
Yeah.
But this season we promised we will do it, because we got Longo who's going to drive us as well.
So. Yeah, absolutely. He will definitely...
What we might do, and we'll formulate this before the end of it, but because the season's halfway through. So what we might do is at the season break, because there'll probably be a break in the middle, what we might do is go back and do a special where we talk about season 1, 2, 3...
Yeah, that's it. I think we're coming up to the season break very shortly. Yeah. And actually, I want to say something about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this week, which was actually kind of a really good episode. Channel 7, at the end of that episode, Channel 7, which is the network that screens it in Australia, said, next week, the season final. And I thought, oh, well, that's come around quickly. And then I went and looked it up. Next week is an episode in the States, or this week by the time you hear the show. And then there is a week's break. And then there's there's an episode on December 10th, and it's the last one for the year, I think.
So we're not getting that one here?
I guess not. I guess like that Channel 7's not screening it, so I don't know what they've done, unless someone's jumped the gun on the
US iTunes.
Yeah, on the season finale. I even just go straight to the US ABC website, you can get absolutely. It that way. So if you're worried about that, if that's happened, if Channel 7 maintains that next week's one is the last episode, check back the ABC website around December 10th.
And also, can Australian networks stop saying the season finale? Because it's not the season finale.
It's the mid-season.
It's a break.
It's a break.
It's a Christmas break, basically.
Yeah.
You know?
Because, it's not season 2 when it comes back.
No,
it's season
1,
part
2.
When you buy that box set.
Exactly.
But, of course,
Arrow was the winner of the week.
It's just getting better and better and better. Look, all bias is here as well. I'm DC boy, not so much the comics these days.
Yeah, but I'm not, and I still feel that way.
And because... I'm a massive Arrow fan. As you know, in fact, we're doing an Arrow book next week. But
a good Arrow book.
Very good Arrow
book.
Yeah,
very good Arrow book.
And spoilers, people, it's from that Kevin Smith.
And it's a great book.
They just keep coming because they keep dropping in Easter eggs. There was a great moment with Deathstroke this week. Well, Manu Bennett's character, because his face was burnt in half, so he's got that. There's lots more island stuff in this one. There were some great appearances. A very big
twist. We've got Ivo in it now. So.
Ivo's in it. Very big twist at the end of the episode.
Which we can't talk about now. We will talk about in a few weeks because our spoiler policy is a couple weeks down the road. But my God, they're heading into territory which I'm really happy about.
Very deep comic book territory.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because next week they introduce
Barry Allen. Yep.
And he'll be in the next two episodes, but they won't be introducing the Flash anymore into the Arrow in costume. The Flash is now officially getting his own pilot rather than a backdoor pilot.
Can I ask a question? Do you think, because Barry Allen is coming back in episode 20, do you think he'll be in
costume?
I don't
even know if they're going to do that or not.
You don't think they're bringing back that 20?
Well, I'm not sure if they will, because he's not getting a backdoor pilot. Whether or not they rewrite that episode, or whether he'll just still be in that episode by himself in costume. That's a good question. That's a really good question. Because the other thing is as well, because as you say, the no capes, the no powers policy in Arrow could kibosh that. Maybe they got
But we also have an issue, which is the twist, which we don't want to say anything about, kind of could be messing with that philosophy
as well. And it definitely gets you into territory
exactly. So there's things going on in that show, and it's just getting better. It's a great show. Enjoy it.
I've said this before. It does what S.H.I.E.L.D. is not doing incredibly well, which is saying, hey, we're based on a comic book. Let's throw in some comic book stuff. S.H.I.E.L.D. is not too bad this week, though.
Oh, and can I also say, Felicity this week was just magnificent.
Felicity?
I love Felicity. Felicity?
Felicity. Oh, yes.
Yeah, Felicity. Thank you.
I thought you meant the TV show Felicity. Well, the J.J. Abrams show?
No. Making me doubt myself now, Jeremy. Felicity, her moment. I don't want to spoil anything, but her moment after the big climactic.
Yes.
She's beautiful. I'm in love
with her. And I think this is our big comparison between this and S.H.I.E.L.D. That ensemble works perfectly together in Arrow. Mm. They've had two seasons to get together, but they all clicked immediately. With S.H.I.E.L.D., they haven't so much clicked or gelled so much as just existed in the same space.
Yeah, no, with S.H.I.E.L.D., you've got two standouts and surrounded by two pretty much bland white people who do nothing.
Yeah.
And then two comic relief who are not quite rounded up enough to be funny.
Although we were talking about this before the show, they've all had individual episodes now. The Fitz and Simmons individual episodes were actually quite good.
They were better than the other two white
particularly bread. Simmons individual episode, which was almost a heartbreaker. Like that was quite ugly.
That actually had a really heartbreaking finale.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just when she turns, she's at the entranceway, and she turns and she's got the tears in her eyes, and you just go, oh, that is just beautiful.
Well, finally, I actually had an episode where I could remember which one's Fitz and which one's Simmons, because they gave them moments that distinguished them. They haven't done that. I still can't remember Agent What's-His-Face's name.
I want to say Grant. It's not Grant, is it?
No, I think it's Grant.
It is
Grant?
I think
you're right. Yeah.
It's taken me all this time to remember that.
Yeah.
And then there's Skye, who shows glimmers of moment, and she's pretty.
She was like a Chinese pop star. That was what she did before this.
But she's white.
The actress. No, but she obviously is fluent and she was popular in that market. That's what was her background. That's what she was popular
interesting.
In.
I had no idea.
No.
I would never have guessed that. That is so out of left field, I'd never have guessed that.
No.
I will say, though, that the two standouts for S.H.I.E.L.D. this week had to be McNichol.
Oh, Peter McNichol.
Was just brilliant.
We won't spoil what his role is, but it is
he's a university professor.
He's a university professor. This was the much touted crossover episode with Thor: The Dark World.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other
directed by Jonathan Frakes.
Oh, was it? I didn't even notice.
Yeah, Captain Riker.
And the other standout moment was May had a moment, which I don't want to spoil. But
no,
May just let's just say kicking ass is an understatement.
Oh, yeah, look, yeah. If they just had a Coulson May show.
Oh, I'd be there.
and they occasionally went to Fitz and Simmons for help on technical stuff. that show was good. When you think about it, there is not a single episode that has really been advanced by having Skye or Agent What's-His-Face. Agent Grant, yeah. Agent Grant. There, you know, they are two superfluous characters.
Yeah, you could structure that entire show so that everything...
Actually, no, I won't say superfluous. They are... inconsequential to the show because they are completely unmemorable characters.
I would even say, I would even go so far as to say that I could almost stomach Skye as being Coulson's pet project if you brought her in.
Yep.
Get rid of Captain America, whatever his name is, whatever that S.H.I.E.L.D. agent's name is.
Yep.
And basically everything that has happened up until now, which has been him and Skye, you make it Coulson and May. As the agents.
Yes.
And you've got Skye there basically as their computer hacker who can help out every now and again, who works with Fitz and Simmons down in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And they don't actually have to go out and do anything.
Well, turn out that Skye has been a double agent the whole time. She's actually Spider-Woman, and introduce her that way.
She could be Jessica Drew.
There you go. She's Jessica Drew.
Yeah, she could be. Yeah.
Yep. that's where I'm going to see the show. That's the fictional show.
That's in my head.
We keep creating this fictional version of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Because S.H.I.E.L.D. isn't good enough.
If you go back and listen to all our podcasts, you'll find that this fictional version of S.H.I.E.L.D. is way better than the one that's
screening. Needed to get us to write that show.
Well, do you want to talk about some stuff that's actually happening in the
world?
Sure,
why not?
Let's do some news headlines then.
The Dark World has now crossed the $500 million mark worldwide. Woohoo!
Woo. AMC and Seth Rogen are said to be developing a series based on Vertigo's Preacher.
Say what now? DC has won what might be the final battle in the long-running dispute with the estate of Superman creators Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. I had no idea it was still going on.
Nor did I. Marvel has announced a rebooted Moon Knight from the team of Warren Ellis and Declan Shalvey for March 2014.
Take that a look at that.
Yeah, I'll look at it.
DC will cancel Stormwatch. What?
That's no!
That's still a thing? In April 2014. Putting the final nail in the coffin for the Wildstorm characters in the New 52. Jim Lee must be so proud.
Oh, not Grifter. Ben Batfleck Affleck and Matt Damon are set to produce a film adaptation of Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips' comic book series Sleeper for Warner Brothers.
Interesting. Sony has announced plans for spin-off films following the third The Amazing Spider-Man film.
Andrew J. West has been cast in a secret role in the current season of The Walking Dead.
interesting. Meanwhile, The Walking Dead's Norman Reedus is up for a role in the rebooted The Crow. Not again.
Finally, Warner has registered a series of domain names as possible titles for the new Batman vs. Superman film. Possible titles include Man of Steel, Battle of the Night.
Man of Steel, Beyond Darkness.
Man of Steel, Black of Night.
Man of Steel, Darkness Falls.
Man of Steel, Night Falls.
Man of Steel, Shadow of the Night.
Man of Steel,
The Blackest Hour.
And Man of Steel, The Darkness Within.
I kind of like Man of Steel, Night Falls. Night with a...
Or we could just call it Batman versus Superman.
Man, we could do that. Or we could call it, I don't know, Unnecessary Crossover or something. I thought it was a one...
I quite frankly, I just think they should call it World's Finest.
I think World's Finest would be great. Even if it was Man of Steel, World's Finest.
Yeah.
That would be great. World's Finest. Because they've not... If you go back and you look at all the things, it was Batman Begins, but then it was Dark Knight, Dark Knight Rises, Man of Steel. They have a history of not naming their... movies after the characters.
Yeah. And if you wanted their names in it, what you could call it is Man of Steel / The Dark Knight, World's Finest.
Yeah.
You know?
The thing is, yeah, the thing is, even if they called it World's Finest and there was just like, oh, people won't know what it is, I'm pretty sure the blanket marketing of Batman and Superman symbols that will be everywhere.
You have that big logo.
Will cover them.
Yeah.
You know, people will get it. People will work it. People like
people know the logos.
Yeah.
You know, they're probably the two most famous logos.
They called it The Avengers and people still worked out it was that film with Hulk and Captain America and all those other, and Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, that small actor.
It didn't do very well at the box office. But so people avoided that like the plague. look, that's like, you know, I'm still kind of interested. I watched Man of Steel again last night, I don't think I liked it as much as I did the first time, and I wasn't a huge fan the first time around. I found it a little bit heartless.
It is heartless. No, it's cold. Do you know what it is? It's bland.
It is bland. And all the moments that kind of I was sort of going through in pure adrenaline the first time, and all those bits that I hated because they were just incongruous with the character, but I got through on pure adrenaline, I didn't even have that the second time around, and so I was just nitpicking. There were some great moments. That opening sequence is still fabulous.
Visual effects are still fabulous.
Visual effects are great. And also some of the moments between Lois Lane and him are quite nice.
And the Krypton stuff is still great. I mean,
the Krypton stuff is phenomenal.
The first 5 minutes of this film, first 10 minutes of this film is just brilliant. You know, it's like, and the whole film should have been that, you know. And
yeah, I would have watched a whole Krypton
prequel. Just call it Krypton.
Krypton.
There you go.
Krypton Nightfalls.
Can we
falls.
Just jump back very quickly to, what's it called? Stormwatch?
Oh, yeah.
This is really interesting to me because Wildstorm Entertainment was Jim Lee's company.
Yeah.
And he's the man who's basically in charge, or one of the four who's in charge of DC at the moment, and all of his characters have been excised.
Look, it's really interesting because Wildstorm as a company, it's been a good 12 years, I think I read one article saying that since they were a thing. And it's been several years since it closed down. And so it hasn't actually been an active entity until the New 52.
Well, it got bought by DC.
It did get bought by DC, but it had been a good, I think between 2004 and 2010, there wasn't a lot happening. There were bits and pieces, and it had been on the wane for a long time until DC revived it as part of their... New 52.
Which is because Jim Lee is part of the creative force behind the New 52.
But one by one, a lot of the series died. You know, Grift is gone, Voodoo's gone, all that sort of stuff. I think Team 7 was part of that as well.
Was Team 7 one
of not quite sure. But the problem was that they...
Resurrection Man? No, title.
But definitely it was Voodoo and Grifter have gone, and now that
Stormwatch
is gone, that kills it. No, I think I'm wrong about Team 7. That was a Teen Titans thing. But what they should have led... with books like Wildcats and The Authority. They were the big sellers. They were the ones that people knew. And yet DC have gone and bought...
Have Wildcats ever resurfaced?
I don't think so. No. I don't know if... they might have appeared in something. I think they said that they appeared in Superman 7 and 8, according to this. or some of the villains appeared in that. But I don't know if they brought back the Wildcats proper. But they should have... By rights, led
so
with them.
Good choice, Jim Lee, for bringing those into the New 52.
I'll just quick look at that little dunk sound that you just heard was me doing a Control F on the Wildcats entry for New 52, and it's not listed. So, they really should. I mean, The Authority was an obvious one to lead with because it would have been a big team book that they could, and it would have been great because you've had some historic people. You've had people like Warren Ellis and, you know, Brian Hitch and all these people working on this book, and it's like, why didn't you lead with that?
No, they led with the man with the napkin on his face.
Exactly, yeah, Hanky Man, Grifter. Hanky Man. Well, a book that got so desperate they crossed it over with Green Arrow, another book that was failing at the time, trying to...
It also crossed over with Resurrection Man too, another book that failed.
Yeah, like so, I mean, Resurrection Man shouldn't have because it was actually a good concept.
It started solid. Problem is it was development because its execution was great.
Because the authors were good, it was Abnett and Lanning.
Yeah.
And you wonder, with all these stories about editorial interference, you wonder how much of Abnett and Lanning got subverted by DC.
Because they've gone
straight to Boom Studios with Hypernaturals.
Yeah, now, which I think is now wrapped up. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that
just wrapped up. We should do Hypernaturals because that was actually written by them. I thought it was just created by them, but I was looking at the issues. Written by them.
I think you're right. They did do all of them. I think there's a couple of issues that they either didn't do as much, but I think they did. I think they've done a lot. So
we should probably in the future have a look at that.
Given we had so much fun with Guardians.
Because they're good writers. They're really good writers.
We enjoyed Guardians of the Galaxy. We enjoyed...
all the Cosmic Universe.
New Deadwardians. So they did
that too.
Yeah. Well, one of them did.
Oh, yeah.
That's really interesting that I think DC's plans for the immediate future seem to involve more Batman stuff. So
DC stalled, dude. Let's be...
No, honest. I said it last week. Mr. Longo asked me, are you out yet? When are you jumping off? And I'm like, I'm a DC guy, dude. I'm hanging on.
I'm hanging on by like three titles at the moment.
Yeah, that's exactly what I tell you. If it wasn't for Batman,
Batgirl.
The new Green Arrow is good. Okay.
I haven't really been reading the new Green Arrow because I have problems with
Green
Arrow.
I've got to give everyone, I have to agree with everyone who's been avoiding it because of the first 16 issues.
Yeah.
That's a long time to be crappy. But since Lemire took over, it's a really good book.
Yeah.
But I can completely forgive people for not wanting to go back
into it. I'm still hanging on to Justice League when it's not Forever Evil.
Earth 2 has just gotten phenomenal.
Earth 2 is one that I've been keeping up with, and because of my Power Girl obsession, World's Finest. But
yeah.
I'm first to admit that World's Finest... I'm with World's Finest like you were with the first 16 issues of Green Arrow. I'm hanging in there, but boy, it's not a pleasant ride.
So
at this
some of these
point.
Ones, like I mean, even Birds of Prey is a team I've been following since their first issues with Chuck Dixon.
Fell off about 5 issues ago.
I fell off long before that, dude. Yeah. So I made a momentous decision this week as a comics collector. I'm actually cancelling a whole lot of my titles, physical copies, and I'm just be getting digital and trades from now on because space is a premium.
Yeah.
And let's face it, I'm going to stop being precious about this bagging and boarding thing. I still collect a bunch of stuff bagged and boarded, so I'm certainly not having to go at people who do that. My Green Arrow collection.
I've been buying is collections.
Yeah, I mean, look, my Green Arrow collection is too deep for me to stop getting those in singles, but and the same with Batman and Saga and stuff like that. I've been getting those since the beginning, and I'm going to keep doing it.
See, like with Saga, I'll buy the trades of Saga. Yeah, I collected those digitally, but now I want to get the trades.
Yeah,
so.
And it's great. And I'm going to do that with Fatal and stuff like that. But you know what? I'm quite happy with the trades because I think, and even digital, because space is something we're not making anything more of.
Yeah.
So look, you know, that was a big decision for me, and I'll see how that pans out in 2014. But I think it's going to be better because I'm reading so much more.
Yeah, and we just don't want to be spending as much money as they're charging for comic books at the moment for reams and reams of paper of crap.
I mean,
there is so much junk coming out at the moment.
Well, you know, this is why it's good to see the return of the graphic novel, which we did last week with Avengers Endless Wartime.
Mm-hmm.
And we will be doing this with the book that's in my hot little hand at the moment, which is Hellboy the Midnight Circus.
Absolutely.
Another graphic novel format of a long-running series, which brings us nicely, I think, to our pick of the week. What do you reckon?
That sounds good to me.
Let's kick it off.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
Here we see
pretty cool.
Any excuse to play some Tom Waits on this show.
Kind of losing your words a little bit at the end there, but that's all right.
Oh, yeah. It was hard because the circus got a little mad.
It did, didn't it?
But I figured, you know, it was a noisy circus.
Yeah, fair enough.
It's amazing what art you can do with an iPhone app and a megaphone. The Midnight Circus is a graphic novel. This one is, if you didn't catch that in the intro, by, of course, Mike Mignola, Duncan Figredo, who is the other main artist on this book, and colours, of course, by the magnificent colourist Dave Stewart. Mm. The other person who's known for doing colours on this book is, of course, Matt Hollingsworth, who we know from Hawkeye and like that. So, start off with, it's a beautiful looking book.
It is. It's a glorious artwork. It's glorious color.
And you'll notice when it starts off, it's kind of got that traditional Hellboyish look in the first few pages. And then when you hit the actual circus, it kind of looks painted and beautiful. Mm-hmm. You know, this. I'm not saying that the first pages aren't beautiful, but it's got this very different painted sort of look to it.
Also, because you're going into this almost surreal world.
It is. I mean, the book suggests, and as we suggested in the intro, the book, you don't never entirely sure whether he's gone to this kind of demented circus carnival thing or if he's gone into hell somehow. Or hell's come to the circus.
Well, it's interesting because you've got those two characters who are kind of controlling it. One is the female demon who looks a little bit like Hellboy with the horns and everything, but we see her in shadow a lot. And then there's the ringmaster.
Well, we should say the basic plot is that Hellboy's run away, gone to the circus. He's run away from the BPRD, gone to the circus, and he's been lured in by these two characters you mentioned, which brings this kind of recurring theme throughout it, and they mention it specifically in the book, which is the Pinocchio kind of influence. Huge amounts of Pinocchio literary references in there and literary allusions.
I want to be a real boy.
Yeah. Well, and that's exactly what it is, and he actually dedicates the book to Carlo Collodi, who is the original Pinocchio author. And I love it. Duncan Fegredo's dedication is to my mum. She always knew better and yet didn't dissuade me from running away to join the circus. So you've got that running throughout this. You know, you said beforehand that this was weren't quite sure why this book existed.
Mm. Well, that's my big issue with this book, because you look at it and you go, okay, so we know so much about Hellboy now. He's been going for years and years and years.
We covered the first book.
Yeah. And to suddenly go back to this little weird prequel where he's a child and he's running off to the circus, and we're not quite sure if the ringmaster is possibly the devil himself, his father, what's the story there. But this whole thing about him exploring this Pinocchio theme, and then it's all kind of over and you go, why? Do we actually need the book is the question.
And I found there's actually a weird point where it diverges into there's these other two, like the ghosts of killers past or something.
The two child molesters
who killed I don't know if they were molesters, but they're certainly child killers from days past. And they kind of pop up when he's run away from the circus, and I didn't quite get why they needed to be there after the circus.
And they were obviously part of the plan, though, because when the ringmaster comes along, he says, I told you not to hurt him.
Obviously
they knew each other. There was all part of that same little surreal world that he was stuck in.
So whether Mignola's just setting up another book, this does seem to refer to other things that doesn't quite make it a standalone book. You kind of inferred that this is the devil's work, quite literally. And I think that's a reasonable assumption, unless these are characters which are referred to in other Hellboy books. And we both got to admit, beyond the first few initial arcs and the odd special here and there.
And the movies.
And the movies, of course. We're not the world's biggest Hellboy experts.
No.
Which is why we chose this one, because it was a brand new one-off prequel that didn't seem to require a lot of foreknowledge.
Quite honestly, I mean, if you haven't read any other Hellboy, you can quite easily read this. Because it doesn't require the other, because it is a prequel. It's happening when he was a child.
And it's actually funny when I think back to the last time we did Hellboy.
Oh. As the Hulk was searching for Rick,
it was a good time, I will admit.
Oh, that's the
last time we did Hellboy. Celebration. Absolutely. Soundboard's gone mad.
All the way back in issue 57, we last did Hellboy.
57, wow, that was a long time ago.
Which was a long, long time ago. We did Seed of Destruction, and we commented back then, apart from having a really good time, evidently, we commented that it was sort of very different to other what we imagined Hellboy to be like.
Yes, exactly.
And so, funnily enough, our second Hellboy book that we've done is also a different Hellboy book because it's a young Hellboy, and it's not quite
the. It kind of makes me want to go and read the stuff in the middle because I feel like I feel like there's something much more at play here than
We definitely have to do another proper. I think the second arc immediately after Seed of Destruction, which was the first book we did, the next arc after that, from what I understand, is much more solid Hellboy story. They do get better as they get along, and they've got different artists, everyone from Mignola himself to Duncan Figueredo does a bunch of stuff. Richard Corbin does some beautiful art on there. So you get all these different people playing in that universe. So I think I would like to definitely read it. So let's mark it for sometime next year.
Next year we're going to be looking at, what was the other one we were going to talk about?
We're going to do a Walking Dead special.
Walking Dead special and a book we just talked about. We just talked about... my mind has gone blank. See, that's why we don't follow through on it.
I don't remember. I have to listen back to the show to see what to wear. We're also making our own version of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, that's right. We're also making our own version of S.H.I.E.L.D. Now, there's another book we said we're going to have to go back and look at. Our listeners right now are yelling at us. They're going, you just said it!
What's wrong with you, old man? Back to the book at hand, though. I still enjoyed it. I still enjoyed it a lot. I have to admit that I felt a little confused some of the time because it is that surrealist sort of
work. And they don't explain the circus. Let's get very clear. They never actually say what this circus is, why it's there, why it was actually pinpointing him. And as I say, it almost felt like mom and dad were checking up on him is what it almost felt like. So it's kind of it's this odd little story. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot, actually. It was a fun read.
And despite the surrealism to it, it's a very old-fashioned kind of story as well. I mean that's what I've noticed about some of the other Hellboy stories that I have read. I've read another one called The Corpse, and you actually find that when you buy the special edition of the Hellboy DVDs, I don't think the Blu-rays, just the DVDs, you get this little one-off comic in there as well.
Oh, okay.
And so that's why I've read, one other random one as well. But, you do find that kind of element of that old-fashioned kind of storytelling because he's obviously influenced by old horror films and old literary figures. And you get a lot of that in here. And I think there's a lot of Easter eggs in here that if you're a fan or you're well-versed in Pinocchio or fiction similar to that, you're going to find those little references throughout there
as
well.
Cool, yeah.
So I think that's worth doing. So definitely, just nice little visual cues, like when he's being led into the circus tent and it's got gentlemen only and then big posters for lust and desire on either side. And
I also love there's a piece of artwork I really love in it where he goes into it's that whole whale sequence and he goes and he's swimming through the fish and then suddenly the next panel the fish are all on strings and he's kind of getting tangled up in them. And it's like he wasn't really underwater at all. And it was like you've just kind of got these moments where it goes from reality to this strange fiction that they've worked their way into.
I love it at the Sideshow Spectacular. Some of the other people on display include things like Zora the Bearded Lady, the Living Skeleton, the Colossus of Norway, the Wooden Boy, of course, the Missing Link, and things like Beast Man and the Fat Lady. I thought it'd be interesting if you'd thrown in a few of the other characters that we might see later in the thing. And I'd like it. You get some glimpses into his past about when he goes to the library, and encounters the Book of Pinocchio for the first time. And then you get this beautiful change in the artwork style just for that moment as well. And Dave Stewart changes up the coloring patterns for that to reflect what's happening in the book. And it's just, and it all blends so seamlessly into the much darker moments in the circus, which is, as I said, it was almost painted art.
Can I just take a side note here and just say that I love digital coloring. I just love that comic books are printed on this beautiful paper now with beautiful coloring. And it's like you go back to the old three-color process of early comic books and you go, wow, we've really come a long way.
And these guys shine. I mean, it's the fact that you're getting... even on pages where you look at it closely and it seems like it's only two or three colors, it's brown and gray with splashes of red, of course, because it's Hellboy. So much is going on in that because you get such subtle variations in shade because of the digital coloring. And I think that's one of the main reasons why to get this, if you don't get this in the hardcover edition, which I've got here, the digital copy just looks, certainly on a retina screen, it really pops
it's beautiful.
Beautifully. And I think the rendering of the new tablets be it an iPad or whatever else you get. We're both reading digitally on an iPad. Mm-hmm. Just pops so beautifully because we both got Retina displays now.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and it's just gorgeous. I mean, I only recently converted over to a Retina display, but it's gorgeous. I mean, just look at the colors are so rich and deep. And I really love this digital era of comic books.
And I think it's not just just talking more generally about books, not just about coloring. I think the digital era of comic books, as I was talking about converting to digital more and more, is allowing for discovery far more than it has in past. And this is particularly true of indies. When you've got Australian books like the Homebrew Vampire Bullets anthology, things like that, or any of the Gestalt stuff, which they're putting
out. The Deep is gorgeous.
Yeah, and actually a lot of America is now finding out about The Deep because it's through Comixology now, and it's just being released, and a lot of people are renewing it as though it's this brand new ongoing series because they're releasing it as single issues
on
Comixology, which I think is wonderful. And I think that's great because now suddenly, buoyed by the fact that, you know, Tom Taylor is obviously a big name because of Injustice and Earth 2 now, The Deep's getting some attention and it definitely deserves worldwide attention. Of course, it's also going to be a TV series soon. But the fact that Australia is now on equal footing, or every country's on equal footing to some extent because the digital process and the Comixology submits stuff can allow people to find your work.
And it's all immediate.
Yeah, exactly.
There's none of this. It waits 6 months for something.
I publish it right here and it's out.
Yeah, in the absolutely. States
and yeah, so I think that's wonderful. And I think it's fair to say we've all read more comics in the last 12 months than we've probably read in our entire lives.
Well, I can say that over the last 2 years, actually. The last 2 years, we've read so many comics.
And we're certainly when we get to our final show of the year, which is going to be around the December 22nd mark, we will probably look back at the last year and some of our highlights that we've discovered maybe for the first time going through. I think we can wrap this up by saying that, you know, this may not be for all tastes.
I think that can be said about all Hellboys.
All boys, yeah. But if you're a Hellboy fan, this is probably a must read. But even if you're not a Hellboy fan and you're looking for a light Hellboy book that doesn't require extensive knowledge on either side of it, this is probably a good option as well.
And it's also a really good starting point for Hellboy. If you've never read Hellboy, this is a really interesting way.
I would probably say start with Seed of Destruction.
Though. I would too, as a purist, but I would say that this gives you a taste of the world. Because you get that kind of really surreal kind of world that Mignola has created.
Yeah, because he was still finding his feet with that first arc.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so with this, you get a taste of it, and then you can basically go on to anything in his world because you've got a flavor for it then.
Well, as I said, if you want to pick this up, Dark Horse puts it out for around the $15 mark in the US, not much more than that here, around the $20 mark here in Australia. As a hardcover, Comixology or the Dark Horse app, about the same price. Yeah. Go check it out. We think it's worthwhile if you haven't done so already.
That's my only criticism of digital, by the way, is that digital books are the same price.
Yeah, look, I have noticed in some cases they do charge a little bit less. The digital print divide thing is actually something that's going on in a few industries at the moment. As you know, I work in a library.
Yeah.
Was
that a library?
I'm in a library. If you're listening, Alan, I work in a library. We can come and talk about that. One of the issues is that publishers, and this is just generally speaking in a lot of formats too, this goes for movies as well, the argument would be that, oh no, all of our overheads happen not in the printing press, they happen in the production and the talent scouting and the actual...
But there has to be taken into account that they're not paying for printing
or shipping.
Paper or shipping, logistics, you know, or any of that stuff.
Or people behind a counter that actually have to sell it
Absolutely.
To you and all
they
that
They don't
sort
have
of
to worry
stuff.
About
yeah.
cuts because they're not worrying about markups and retail.
Yeah, because often the bookstore will charge the full retail price because they have to hire someone to sell it to you.
Exactly.
And all that sort of
and
stuff.
And they've got to pay their rent and everything else. So you look at it and go, cutting out all those extraneous things, there should be a cheaper price on digital.
I agree, but it's great. Sometimes we'll have those massive
99 cent sales.
Yeah, and they're happening with some really, really good books lately. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll be over by the time you hear this, but there was a Doctor Who 99 cent sale this week, of course.
There was a Green Lantern one a week ago. They were literally doing all of the Geoff Johns Green Lantern.
Geoff Johns in the first arc of Lights Out, I think. The whole Lights Out arc.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. So that's great. But yep. As we said, go out and check it out if you're looking for a one-off Hellboy book. I think that's...
Look, I recommend it. I think it's a really good book. I really enjoyed it. I think it's got a lot of heart behind it. I didn't quite understand some of it, but I think that's good. means it's got repeated viewings.
Yes.
Or repeated readings, because you're going to go back and try and find the little nuances in it. But hey, I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Well, David, I think it's time that we got paid a visit by a certain girl, friend of ours.
I think she's here. Hold on, have a look. There she is.
Hey, guys. It's time for our feedback section again. We actually did receive a bit of feedback this week, but I'm not going to read it out because we got about 3 emails for our Man of Steel competition. We are giving away...
One of them's almost a thesis.
There's a couple. We've received 3 emails. We received 3 nice, lengthy emails.
Yeah.
That we're going to read out next week when we draw this thing. But we're going to let this run for another week. Thank you for you guys who have already sent something in. But we're giving away 2 Blu-ray copies that are multi-region coded. So wherever you are in the world, we will send this to you. It's our first international competition.
It certainly is.
And we're also going to be sending you out a copy of Man of Steel, the early years prequel novel, which is admittedly not very good, but, you know, it can be yours for free.
And a coveted Behind the Panels bumper sticker.
And a coveted Behind the Panels bumper sticker, and maybe even a badge as well.
If I can find the bag. I've got the bumper stickers.
So particularly for those of you at international places who won't ever meet us at a convention unless we start travelling to you, or you travel to a Sydney convention, this is a great competition. This is a great way for you to own a piece of us.
Oh, that sounds so wrong.
You want a piece of us? This is your chance. All you have to do to win this magnificent bounty is email us at feedback@behindthepanels.net. That's feedback@behindthepanels.net with Man of Steel as a subject header, and tell us why you think Man of Steel is worth watching again. That's all you have to do. You can write us a thesis on why Man of Steel is worth watching again, as some of you already have. Or you can just say, I reckon it's good. But keep in mind that if it's a really good answer, it will be read out on air.
So keep it clean.
Keep it cleanish.
Cleanish.
Yeah. And it will be read out on air, and the most creative answer, as judged by us, will be the winners.
Absolutely.
So we look forward to hearing more of those from you. In the meantime...
Well, we should also take a moment here to remind people that if you want to hear movie stuff about us again, Man of Steel related, the GMC, or Geek Movie Club podcast, is actually being produced now. It is irregular. We haven't quite decided whether it's weekly, fortnightly, or monthly. But at the moment, there's actually going to be another one recorded today, so that's weekly. Who knows if that'll stay that way?
Probably not. We do actually have to do a Doctor Who special this week. So the best way to listen to that is, of course, go to geekactually.com, where you'll find all
the
podcasts.
Actually, the best way to listen to
it
is go to
iTunes. And subscribe to the Geek Actually super feed.
Or Geek Actually Movie Club, because it has its own feed
as well. Feed. But if you want to get everything in one hit.
Absolutely. And in fact, the Geek Actually Geek Actually super feed is our number one feed. It seems that most people do subscribe to that.
And it's because it's been the one that's been highlighted on the front page of...
Yeah. Do you know what's really funny? I was looking at the Apple TV the other day, and in the featured and noteworthy, right next to each other is Film Actually and the Geek Actually super feed.
Oh, beautiful.
So yeah. Film Actually is back on the list because... GMC also comes out through there. So people who are all already subscribed to that one are suddenly getting new content.
That's
again.
Wonderful.
So it's really interesting that these are things that are turning up. Geek
we know you love our film shows, and whenever we do a film on this show, it's always our highest rating episode. Yes. So we know you love the film, but we love our comics too. So we're trying to keep a nice balance happening. That's why we've got 2 shows.
Absolutely. And Geek Movie Club is not Film Actually. We don't just generally just lock into a feature film review. We talk about everything, including... what we talked about last week, which we can't mention
on this show, but if you want to know what that is,
go check out.
Other ways to support us, of course, are to head to behindthepanels.net. You can like us on Facebook/behindthepanels. And of course, any of those iTunes feeds that we just mentioned, including the Behind the Panels iTunes
feed.
Go to that. Go open up iTunes, go to Behind the Panels. Leave a star rating, leave a little written review that's a positive review. Doesn't take you very long. And honestly, it brings me so much joy when I see a brand new review going up, because it just makes my week. And it means that we're going to be seen by more people more often.
Absolutely.
So thanks to those of you who have already done that. We look forward to hearing from more of you. If you want to hear more from me, you can, of course, follow me on Twitter @DVDBits. You can go to therealbits.com. That's therelbits.com. Or, of course, on behindthepanels.net and our other shows.
If you want to find out more about me, head over to geekactually.com, where we host all of this stuff from, at David McVeigh on Twitter, or of course we also have the Geek Actually fan page, facebook.com/geekactually.
And he's not here, but Mr. Dave Longo can be found on Twitter @DaveLongo, or at his website, which I've heard is being relaunched very shortly, damngoodcup.com.
Absolutely. Go check that out. I'm sure he'll have his Adam McKay thing up very quickly.
Okay, well, until next time, thank you all for listening again, and we hope for you to tune back in next week when we're going to be doing Green Arrow Quiver.
Oh, yes.
By that Kevin Smith and Phil Hester and Andy Parks. Until then, I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
And this is Behind the Panels.